Our new bestie has changed how we track our investments. Why have over 400,000 investors chosen ShareSite? It's simple. This online investment dashboard for your investment portfolio supports over 500,000 stocks, ETFs, and funds, plus integrated with more than 200 platforms, ensures your entire investment portfolio is organized and accessible in one place. Move beyond the limited insights from brokerage statements. ShareSite offers a comprehensive view of your financial performance, including analyzed reports, dividend gains, and the impact of currency fluctuations, all through intuitive graphs and visualizations. But here's the best part. For the investee besties out there, ShareSite is offering a special deal. Save 4 months when you purchase an annual premium plan. It's time to dive deep into performance metrics, streamline tax reporting, and share your portfolio with ease. Join the link in the episode description to sign up to ShareSite now and transform your investment experience. Welcome to Girls That Invest. Today we have a very special episode where we are interviewing a fantastic guest. You probably have seen their name in the title, but I just need to stress how much of a big deal this is. I flew to New York literally just to do this interview when it came through because we were like, yes, absolutely. There is so much that we can learn. And I cannot stress enough that it was absolutely worth the 17 hours to fly there. Could I have done it by Zoom? Probably, but then you wouldn't have had the video content. But anyway, without further ado, I need you to know that in this episode, we talk about personal branding. We talk about becoming an entrepreneur. We talk about how to make your money work for you. We talk about some of the controversies of being, you know, a founder or having a personal brand in 2024. And I took so much away from this episode. I know you will too. This guest doesn't actually need an introduction. So without further ado, let's get straight into the episode. Thank you for coming in. And I mean, I guess we're in your studio.
Yeah, thank you for coming to me.
I don't think we've traveled 17 hours for an episode before. This is probably a first,
okay.
But it goes to show how excited we are to have you on.
Yeah.
Ryan, first thing I wanted to start asking you about was, you know, you've got your new book that's come out, mm-hmm. Incredible. How was it writing it? What was that like? It's not your first.
No, it's my third and my last. that is for sure. It's hard. Writing a book is hard. It takes mm-hmm. a lot of time. I mean, a lot of my contemporaries or my competition, if mm-hmm. you will, have books written by other people,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's like, I don't want to read a book written by someone else, unless it's like a Walter Isaacson book being written about Elon Musk. Like, mm-hmm. I'll read that. That's interesting because I don't think Elon has time. But for me, like each book that I've written I've written for a very specific purpose. And it's almost like I wrote it because I had to. It's not that I had the time or the wherewithal, and it's a very tough process and it takes a really long time. Brand It Like Sirhan is my third book, and it took 2 years to put together, writing every Saturday. And it's really for that entrepreneur, right? It's for the gig worker.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I saw a stat 5 years ago by the United States Department of Labor that said that 23% of US taxpayers file a 1099, which is what you fill out as a tax form if you're an independent contractor.
Mm-hmm.
So not a salaried employee. It's like, that felt like a lot.
It's a lot of people.
23% of the United States taxpayers are making money selling something, either selling their services as an author or consultant or a therapist or real estate or insurance, whatever it might be. It's like, wow. Today, it's 36%. And by 2027, it's going to be over 50%. And that's just the United States. I mean, my assumption is that it's probably somewhat on a similar trajectory in every other country. I might be wrong, but it's wild to me, which means a lot of people are trying to figure out an alternate means of income. And outside of the traditional get a job, 9 to 5, retire, get a pension, die. And so those people need to, one, learn how to sell, which is what my first book was, Sell It Like Sirhan. They need to have the confidence to sell, which is what my second book was, which was Big Money Energy. And then if you can have all the tools and all the confidence in the world, but if no one knows what you're selling, if no one knows about your podcast, if no one knows about your services, then you're not going to make any money. And then you just basically created a hobby, which could be fine. But I think for most people, you need money to survive. And so that's what Brand It Like Sirhan teaches you how to do.
What I really like about it is, you know, a lot of our listeners ask, how do I grow wealth? You know, and you learn about your normal 9-to-5 job. You learn about investing in shares. We talk about real estate, which could have been a completely full episode with you as well in that space.
But happy to talk about real estate.
I am sure you are. When it comes to personal branding, it was really important to have this conversation because I've never seen it become mainstream or popular to say, hey, I'm working on my personal brand.
Yep.
And a lot of people want to know, could you build like a billion-dollar business by having a personal brand?
Mm-hmm, for sure. I think Sam Altman the other day said that he expects very soon for there to be a $1 billion business of one person.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, first of all, you have to look at, I mean, look at musicians and athletes, right? Like Taylor Swift is probably worth a lot more than $1 billion, and she's one person.
Mm-hmm.
But she has a talent, right? So if you don't have an athletic or musical talent, let's say, then how do you go out and build that brand? And that's, you know, that's what we go through. But yes, I do think that someone could build a massive, massive personal brand. And people are doing it right now, right? You're doing it. Other people are doing it. They're using the power of social media. They're using the power of writing. They're using the power of, you know, kind of general thought leadership out there. But then what is the valuation pegged to?
Mm.
Like Mr. Beast, right, is the most watched person in the world. And he does work, right? So he creates content. And he's a billion-dollar performer.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're not a performer, then what are you? Are you selling something? Are you writing books, right? You have to understand and try to figure out what your lane is. But I, you know, we started this company, or three companies, and named it after myself. And I'm definitely very personally involved. But, you know, if and when our businesses are worth $1 billion, it won't just be because of me. I mean, there's, you know, there's like 650 people here now. Like, I don't know, like, what's it going to be like in 3 years, 4 years, 5 years? I don't know. Maybe I'll move to New Zealand and just hang out with you.
You should. It's a fun place. I think the kids, really good for kids. Everyone just runs around barefoot.
Yeah, because there's no animals.
Exactly.
And there's no bugs. I remember when I got there for the first time, and we landed in the North Island, and it was so wildly beautiful. Your tree lines are so low.
So
if you spend time in the United States, you know, and a lot of times you can't see that far because the tree lines are so high. Like mountains just sort of like they grow into the distance. Like they don't just randomly appear.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go to New Zealand, you're like, oh, there's a mountain right there. And then there's a glacier over here. And then there's a waterfall over there. And then it's cold up there, but then it's hot down here. And you're like, where am I right now? And then you can walk around butt naked. Like
a utopia for sure.
And there used to be all these deer, and then you sold them all to Japan, you know, and there's helicopters everywhere. It was just like the craziest experience ever. But you go to Australia and everything kills you, right?
Everything kills you. Now, our love for Australia is kind of like the love relationship between the US and Canada. Australia is like our big brother. Don't really like him, but we need them.
I don't know if I look at Canada like our big brother.
Maybe
I
mean, the other way around.
I don't know. I feel like Australia is kind of like the Vegas, right? Las Vegas of New Zealand. So it's like you go there and you could stay there for a long time, but you better be prepared for what you signed up for. You know, and people do, and it's great. And Vegas is a great place. It's a great place for business. It's a great place to invest. It's a great place for taxes. I totally get it. But you have to be prepared, like, for what you're in for.
You really do. And when it comes to, you know, deciding, okay, I hear you, personal branding is a good option. You can make a $1 billion company out of it. But someone's listening and goes, Ryan, I just don't know if I have the tools to start. I don't know. Like, I work a 9-to-5 job. I want the independence. I've seen you do it. But I don't have a big team. I don't have 650 people. What's the first step they should be taking?
Well, I only have 650 people now. When we started in the middle of COVID, it was me and three people, okay? But I think you can do whatever you want by yourself as well.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be pre-COVID that people talked a lot about content to commerce.
Yes.
It's like that's what you would hear all the time. the Kardashians, right? Mr. Beast, et cetera. You know, people would produce content to commerce. You know, you'd see influencer deals that are in movies, et cetera. And then something happened when we all got locked up inside and online education ended up becoming a real thing, mm-hmm. not a weird thing.
You know? Not a scammy thing.
Correct, right? It became real. Communicating with friends digitally became a first choice option and not necessarily I'm a lazy choice option or I can't fly to you, et cetera. And so there's like a third C, which someone I interviewed in Brandit like Sirhan really brought about and like really changed the way that I started thinking about things, which was content to community to commerce. And that third C is probably the most important. And I think anybody can build an active and a passive community. Active, meaning you're actually going out to build it. You're doing it online, through video, through the written word. You're doing it in person. You're doing events, right? And you're bringing people or pulling people into your message. And then passively, right? You can do it through content creation and building a following. And then how do you take that community you've built? How do you really turn them into like your own personal army? And then how through, I guess what I'll call like passion commerce, how do you turn that passion that you're aligned in that community with into something that actually creates a business? So like on the education side of our business, we do sales training, super niche. It is sales training for all salespeople. So we have salespeople now in 128 countries from like New Zealand and Australia to Iraq and Iran to New York and California and everywhere in between. And the passion everybody has is for earning an income, sure, but also just bettering themselves and becoming better salespeople for whatever they want to sell. Some of them sell pianos, some of them sell t-shirts. It's wild to me. But the most important thing in that business, and there's 22,000 of them now in there, is the community and really activating that community and making people feel like they're a part of something. And I think where we crack that in COVID was understanding that people are very, very alone, right? And especially salespeople. Like salespeople, they'll get a bad rap, but it's because they work for free. They have no benefits whatsoever. No one cares about them. And they're by themselves all day, every day.
And they're extroverts. So they usually want more people to talk to.
Right. Or they're like me and they're like closet introverts who parade themselves around like an extrovert because they need to pay rent. Oh, 100%. Yes. No, I don't. Yeah. No, I'm not an extrovert at all. But building that community is something that anybody can do, even a person of one.
And when you talk about building communities, I think you've done it so well with the, you know, brand that you have and the umbrellas of different things. When it comes to community, what have you found that's worked? Like, what have you done that's just across all different brands has just made your community so strong? Is it one thing? Has it been a number of small incremental changes?
Mm-hmm. The first thing is definitely consistency, mm-hmm. right? It's been consistency and really being there. Like even for our own internal company, like no matter what, no matter where I am, I do a weekly webinar just for our company, bringing special guests and everything every single week, right? Uniting that community. For our selling community, our sell it community all over the world, like we are very consistent in what we provide for them and how we provide for them and the interactions that we create for them and how we show them also our gratitude. I think it's consistency in terms of how you connect with them. And two, it's also leading with thanks, right? And really, really strong gratitude for everybody who's there because we know that they don't have to be there. Like they don't have to be in our community. They can watch TV, you know? And this is probably also a good time to say that we are definitely in New York City and we are in a very busy location. Our office is located at the intersection of Broome and West Broadway, which if you don't know New York City, is significantly popular for traffic. And so there's a lot of honking horns. Maybe these microphones won't pick it up and you're all listening like, what? Yeah, right now it's Friday in the later afternoon. These people are trying to get home and they're just honking at our building. They're angry that we're doing this podcast up here. They're trying to ruin it one honk at a time.
God just doesn't want this to happen today.
That's correct.
So back to community. I thought you had a really good point of giving thanks. How do you do that to a community? Is it just, you know, announcing at the start of a video or start of an event, hey, thank you for being here? How do you show thanks?
Honestly, part one is, yeah, like really always thanking people for being here and taking the time and not asking them for things, right? You have to give, not ask. It's the same way like a selling lesson that we teach all the time that we learn in like improv classes as an actor is you want to listen to someone to respond, not listen to them to reply. Like, I mean, you know, we do a lot of podcasts, right? And people will have their list of questions and they'll ask a question and they'll listen to me, but only so that they can reply with their next question. They don't actually care what I just said and they won't engage. They're like, On page 27, you said, and that's a way a lot of us hang out with other people and engage with our communities. You're just trying to get through it.
Sure.
And that's not passion commerce. That's not a great community. You wouldn't be friends with someone who treated you that way either, right? You want to be friends with someone who's like, what? What'd you, really? No way. She said what? Like, that's like, that's a friend.
Yeah.
Not someone who's like, that's so crazy you said that because for me, and there's people like that. So it's thanking people for being there all the time at the beginning and at the end of either a session, a video. You know, I do an annual letter for investors and clients and everybody. And I thank them for reading it at the beginning, in the middle, and at the end. Because I know they don't have to. So that's one. Two is also creating reward, right? People, especially salespeople, we are incentivized by the potential for reward. So are we going to acknowledge your wins? Are we going to acknowledge the hard work you put in? What kind of acknowledgement can we lead with, right? That's a big, big part of it. People just want to be acknowledged. They want to be seen, right? They want to be heard. They want to build that trust with you. And so if you acknowledge them, then it's like a drug. They want that next acknowledgement, you know, especially in a public forum.
And so if someone's sitting here and they're going, okay, it's making sense. I don't need a big team. You've made that clear. I can start small and I need to take care of my community. But what is my personal brand going to be about if I'm at the very start of my journey?
Yep.
How do you come up with ideas? Do you ask your friends and family? Do you jump on TikTok and scroll until you see what you like?
Yeah, possibly. So we created something called our Serhant Brand Strategy System, and we teach it to people all over the world now. And so it's three phases. So whether you're trying to build a personal brand for yourself, like you want to build a company that's known for you, you want to sell whatever you want to sell, whatever you want to do. You want to be an actor and you want more people to know you, whatever it might be, or for building a product. It starts with phase one, which is core identity. Okay. And so you have to figure out what your and is. So what's that thing you want to sell? How are you going to make money? Just what is it? How are you going to make money? Maybe you're a therapist. You don't view yourself as a salesperson. But if no one comes to you for therapy, you're not, what are you going to talk to yourself in the mirror? So you want to be able to get business through referrals. You know, you help one person, they'll tell their friend who's having a mental breakdown to come use you too. That's fine. But you want to put yourself out there on the right platforms. You want to be on Google, right? You want to be on the different websites. You need to be out there selling your services, right? That's how you're going to build and make money. So your core identity is I'm therapy. But what's the and? And you can only pick one. Okay. So your therapy and what? Therapy and maybe your specialty is divorce, right? Maybe your specialty is your location. Like you are therapy and Auckland, right? You are therapy and personal trauma because maybe you went through something so traumatic and you brought yourself out of it so that you talk about it so much that people say, well, I would love to work with her as a therapist because she knows what I'm going through versus just a therapist who has a nice voice, okay? So that's an example of kind of how you really start and you figure that out. And one of the exercises, and it's funny you bring it up, that you can do to understand potentially what that and is because sometimes people don't know. Right? I talk to real estate people around the world all day, every day. And they're like, well, I don't know what my and is. I'm real estate and what? Okay, so go find a friend who you trust, okay? But not your mom, not your dad. No one who's going to lie to you.
No one that loves you.
No one that loves you. Go to someone who will tell you the truth and they don't care if you're going to get upset because they're doing this because you're telling them to do it and ask them to define you to you without using your name. So how would you describe me to a friend and just don't use my name? And it's really interesting to see what people will say, right? And it always, typically it starts superficially. It usually starts with how you look. Because they're trying to describe you, right? Which gives you a key into what your first impression is, right? So like they could be like, well, the guy that's like kind of always looking like he got out of bed. Okay, so that's first, which then to you signals that you're the guy that has, who cares more about himself than he does about literally anyone else he comes into contact with. Because you always look like somebody who got out of bed, which means you have respect for yourself and no one else, right? And they're tall and they have shaggy hair. And what they said to me was, he's funny. He's not as funny as he thinks he is. So whatever. Has gray hair for someone so young, which is weird. Okay, great. And looks at the ground while he walks. And I was like, all right, so so you take the best and you leave the rest. So from that, I'm like, huh, I guess I don't want to dye my hair because that's a pain in the butt. I guess I could tone down my humor, but like, I like making people laugh, but I don't know why I look at the ground while I walk. That's so weird. I talked to this guy, his name was Alex. I was like, that's how you would describe me to someone else, as the guy who looks at the, he's like, yeah, man, that's how everyone knows you. I was like, what? Really?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So like, just, there are probably things that you do that you've just never asked.
What's wrong with looking at the ground and walking? Because I do that and now I'm self-conscious about it.
So I was self-conscious about it. It presents a first impression of someone who's closed. So if you're trying to build a business, if you're trying to sell something, the first impression, you don't have to make eye contact with everybody and like stare them down on the street. That's probably a little weird.
Sure.
But if you're stuck in your phone or if you're looking at the ground, what your first impression is, hi, my name is Ryan and I'm insecure. What's your name?
Got it.
Right?
That's true. Yeah.
That's the first impression. And your first impression, if you're not careful, is your last impression. And so, and again, it depends on, like, I'm not here to judge anybody. Maybe weakness is your thing. But I had to like really dig deep down. I was like, why do I do that? And then I started noticing. I was like, oh, wait, I do that. And it's because, and I figured it out, for a long time, from like 13 years old until I was like 21 years old, I had really, really bad acne. So I had bad, really bad skin. And so when I would walk in school and make eye contact with strangers, their eyes would go all over my face because I would have bad skin, right? And so it made me so self-conscious and it made me feel bad and it would embarrass me. And so it was just easier not to make eye contact with strangers who would then like look over to your cheek and then look back at your eyes, you know, because it would make me feel bad. Like, I guess you can see that. And so it just became, even as my skin cleared up and I got older, it became part of my muscle memory. Like, I just never outgrew it until someone actually told me. So all of that is to say, as you're figuring out your core identity to build your own brand, you are the thing you're looking to sell and a niche audience, that passion commerce. Maybe your thing is kids. Maybe it's kites. Maybe it's, you know, New Zealand. Maybe it's honey. You guys love honey. Maybe it's, I don't know, whatever it might be. And you really lean into that so that you can become memorable, because a strong brand is consistent and memorable and clear. Like, you know exactly what Nike is. Mm-hmm. You know exactly what Taylor Swift is.
We do.
Those are two very different, but very clear, super consistent, and very, very memorable brands. You know, one's a product, one's a person.
I actually missed the Taylor Swift concert for this episode.
Oh.
So I agree with you. Taylor Swift is, she was in Australia, but yeah. I'll see her again. I didn't really like her that much.
Oh, so she's in New Zealand right now?
Australia.
Oh, she's in Australia, right? Because she came out of Japan. Why do I know these things?
Because
why do
everywhere.
We know these things? Because it's everywhere. Oh my, it's insane to me.
It's incredible what she's achieved. I want to go back to what you said earlier. You touched on like clothing. And, you know, being the guy that wakes up and looks crappy and what that presents to you. You also kind of mentioned it in the book. And I guess being a real estate agent, like, you just naturally do want to present the best foot forward if that's your background. We've had people, a lot of Gen Zers, say things like, well, why should I dress nicely? Like, I want to be comfortable. I feel like you've got something to say on this. I want to dress for myself.
Sure.
And people shouldn't judge how I look. But
totally fine.
Seems like you've got a different view on that. Mm. For those listening, should we be caring a bit more about how we dress if we're building a, you know, a personal brand?
So caveat is, you should do whatever makes you happy, but then you don't get the right to complain.
I like that.
Right? So if you're not getting the jobs you want, you're not getting the dates you want, you're not making the kind of money you want, and you wake up every day and you go out dressed the way you want, you act the way you want, you talk to people the way you want, and it's all about you. You do not get the right to complain when you don't get what you want. Because when you make it all about you, you're not allowing anybody else to help you.
Hmm.
Okay. I think we all make a decision every single day when our eyes open and we're blessed with another day on this planet, which is, I am going to go out into the world and show respect for everybody else, or I'm going to go out into the world and show respect for myself. Now, I've never been a rapper or an athlete or anything other than what I've currently been. So maybe I'm way off base. There are different ways to build brands. I don't think an actor should wear a suit and tie all day long either, right? But if you are presenting yourself in a certain way and then being treated a certain way, and then you're upset about that, you don't get the right to complain. Like if you dress like a police officer and people come and ask you for help, you don't get to say, why are you asking me for help? It's because you dress like a freaking police officer, dude. And so I think that's a super simple way to look at it. And the way that I look at it is, and listen, tomorrow is Saturday, right? I will wear whatever I want tomorrow because tomorrow I am waking up and I have respect for myself only. I do not care what anyone else thinks. I'm going to wear whatever I want, but I'm also not asking anyone for anything.
True.
Right? And so you want to be authentic to yourself. You want to be very true to who you are in your core, but actually be true to who you are, right? Not true to who you think you're supposed to be, right? Like imagine, like most people watch a funny movie and you laugh because other people around you are laughing. You watch the same funny movie by yourself. There's no validation of laughter around you. And so you don't know whether to laugh or not. And that's a pretty weird way that we all live now. Like you see funny things on your phone, you're like, ha. But had that been on a big screen and you're surrounded by other human beings, it's a moment you're like, wow, that's the funniest thing I've ever seen. It might not be, but you know, emotion is contagious. And so that's how I think about it.
And if someone's listening and going, okay, makes sense, fine, I'll dress up a little bit nicer and the personal brand makes sense. And now I've got a blueprint of how to get started, things like community, things like having discipline. But what can I do to make sure I'm not making mistakes? Or rather, what have you seen that people do when it comes to personal branding that, you know, you wish you could have just said, hey, maybe don't do that? What's the common things that come up?
So you have to operate within your lane and within the lane of your and, okay? So like it would not be on brand for me as a real estate broker to talk about female hygiene.
Probably not, no.
Right? It would probably not make as much sense for me to talk about sports all day. I can, and it makes sense for other people. But if I'm not passionate about it, it doesn't align my interests with what I'm actually trying to get to. So you just want to be cautious and careful of how you present yourself with respect. I think it all comes down to just respect. Mm-hmm. Like what would you talk about that's then respectful or not? If you're a stand-up comic, your line is completely gray. For the most part, you can kind of do, say, act, dress however you want, right? It's part of your job. And if people come and pay you for it, you lean in harder, right? That's your thing. If you're not blessed to be funny, then you have to do extra work, right? You have to be cut out for other things.
Do you have an example where you've seen someone with a personal brand that, you know, made a mistake and you kind of wish they'd gone about it a different way?
Sure. I see people project themselves too far into the future when they're not ready, right? Salespeople who first and foremost, they focus on the logo and the color and the office. They get very focused on the busy, busy, busy work, but they only do that either because they're trying to emulate somebody or because they are too nervous to do the real work. It's easier to do the fun work. The branding colors, the logo, I'm going to do the website for 2 weeks. I'm not going to go and get a client yet because I don't know what I'm doing yet, but I'm going to do websites. I'm going to build. And you spend all your time setting up office. Like I had a business partner like that once and it was a tough relationship. And I thought that he, you know, because your number one job ever is to build lead flow, right? Generate pipeline. If you're doing podcasts, you want to get more guests. So you have more content and you're keeping consistent as part of your brand, right? The type of guest is important. Are they going to be good for my audience or not good for my audience? You know, a mistake that I see podcasters make is thinking that their audience wants to hear or see things that they actually don't, right? And so if it's not helpful, and there's so much noise outside, I think these microphones are okay. But if it's not helpful to your audience, then you want to be careful that way, right? Or people that go too far into politics or people that just don't start. Like the biggest brand mistake that I see people make is they don't understand that they already have a brand except it's just intentional. And they haven't even tried to control it, so they don't take control of it. We all have a brand, whether you like it or not. Your brand is your reputation. Your reputation comes from the perception the world has of you, and that perception starts with your core identity because it's what leaves your lips. It's what leaves your fingers, right? So core identity to perception to reputation to brand.
For business owners, every transaction is more than just a swipe of a card. It's the culmination of your hard work, dedication, and commitment to your customers. That's why I'm excited to share with you a game-changing solution that's simplifying the way businesses like yours accept payments. Introducing Tap to Pay on iPhone, powered by Stripe. Contactless payments has never been easier. You can seamlessly accept contactless payments directly from your iPhone, and the best part, there's no additional hardware required. Think about it. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe cater to businesses of all sizes, empowering them to accept payments right from their iPhones. It's a game changer for businesses looking to scale quickly and stay flexible, with quick setup that takes minutes, not days. So, how can Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe benefit your business? It's simple. Increased revenue, expanded reach, and enhanced customer experience. It's a win-win-win. To learn more about how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can transform your business, visit stripe.com/tapiphone today.
And so if you don't take control of it, like you're not going to control the narrative. You know, something we say in the PR world all the time, and as a salesperson for real estate, we spend a lot of time in marketing and PR. You know, we talk about pushing your message and pulling your message, the classic push and pull of advertising and PR. But we also talk a lot about controlling the narrative. Mm. So, and the same thing for personal brand. You know, it's like if I do something and it gets written about, that reporter gets to write the narrative. Or I know I'm about to do it, so I'm going to control the narrative and I'm going to give this as an exclusive to a different reporter. And that way I can have at least some control, not all control, but some control of what that narrative is. And I think people have to make the decision of, you know, you are the main character in your story. Do you want to control the narrative or do you want someone else to control it? And you don't always know who that other person is. That's how rumors start. You know, that's how, like, I didn't know that I walked and looked at the ground all the time, but apparently everybody else did because they were controlling my narrative.
I'm going to stop looking at the ground now. I think this is going to be a lesson for me when I start walking. You said something that was quite interesting earlier, and I wanted to go sort of on a tangent from it. You were talking about, you know, controlling the narrative, how important that is. One of the downsides of having a personal brand is the idea that you can get canceled because your brand is so reliant on you. And sure, being canceled can happen to anyone and people recover from it. But when it's tied to your brand, you know, it's such a huge brand risk. How can people mitigate that?
Mm-hmm. Well, one, don't be stupid. Don't say dumb things. Don't do stupid stuff. I did a TV show for 10 years called Million Dollar Listing New York, right? And the spinoff shows and all that. And so I would want to film that penthouse right over there. And the seller would say, yeah, I'll do it. And then they call back and say, actually, you know, I don't want to do it because they're going to make me sound stupid. I'm like, the only way a camera will make you sound stupid is if you say stupid things. Don't say stupid stuff. And like, well, they might take things out of context. I'm like, it's kind of hard to do. Only if you say something that is easy to be taken out of context and they could wrap it around. Like it's like you have to be self-aware.
Yeah.
Right? So you have to be very, very self-aware. You have to be cognizant. I've done a few things that I think are potentially cancelable, and good thing I have a team who immediately delete them. Whoa, 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 whoa. And sometimes I think all of us sometimes are tone deaf to certain things. Like you don't know. Sometimes you just don't know. You're just not aware. Like I didn't realize that posting a photo of a rose was like really bad today because roses killed a little kid because of the thorn. I didn't know. It's Valentine's Day. I had no idea. And so I think the easiest way around that is, one, don't be stupid, right? Always think about your audience, okay? Who's your audience? And three, if you do make a mistake, immediately take ownership. Like people actually love a comeback story more than a win story. And more than a loss. As much as people want to take you down and see you fail, they also like really appreciate trying. You know, like for what it's worth now, like the most feedback I get about myself today and our companies today, and you know, I do podcasts and interviews and things, are people who come to me who are like, man, like I really want to hate you. Like I really, really hate that you win. Like it really pisses me off because you haven't, I've been doing this for 50 years and you haven't, but I love you and I'm so inspired by you because I've followed you this whole time and you came to New York with no money. I have no idea how you did what you did. And then you did this show and then you did this other thing and then you started your own company in COVID like a lunatic and you're just like nice and you help people and like, God, God, but they love the come up story, right? And they love too. Like I blew up my whole life in 2020. Like I left everything I knew, I left completely behind. And so the building of Serhant was kind of a comeback story, right? It was a, right, he broke his whole life. How does he come back from that? And I think people appreciate that. You know, they can relate to it easier than just, I don't know who on earth can relate to Taylor Swift. You can relate to her lyrics. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the reasons she's so popular because she writes and sings about things in a catchy way that we've all been through. Like we've all had bad boyfriends and girlfriends. Like we've all had loss. Like we've all experienced emotion, you know, and that's what makes them relatable. Like I can't relate to her life. You know, like I can't relate to a huge athlete. Like I don't know what it's like to do that. And so if you are relatable in both your wins and your losses, that is then how you really, really build that community. And so even going back to one of your other questions about how you engage that community and build it, one of the secrets is like really leaning into any loss, right? Like I talk more about every book that I have. I think there's more dead deals and failure in those books than any wins.
That's true. Like at the start of this book, you began it with like, my house was flooded.
Yeah. No, every book starts with like a massive failure.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to read like a book where someone's like, all right, page one, I'm awesome. Here's how I'm awesome. See, I don't like that guy.
Yeah.
You don't want to hear that guy. You know, so I start every book and every community engagement and all that we do where I'm like, all right, I just lost an $18 million deal and I hate everybody right now, but here's how I'm going to get through it. Like, here's how I get through loss. So here's how you can get through loss. And there's tricks and tips that we have. And then I think it builds an authentic relationship that is the good, the bad, and the ugly, and everything in between. And I think that's what people want to be friends with. And people hate being sold, but they love shopping with friends.
Mm.
Look, I'm dropping nugget after nugget on this podcast.
This is fantastic. I'm enjoying it. I'm learning. And I know our community.
Are you tired?
Am I tired?
Yeah. When'd you get here?
Do I look tired?
No. I'm just curious.
No, I got here 2 days ago.
Did you?
Yeah.
Takes a second.
But I'm also very, what's the best way to say it?
You have great energy. So that's why I was just curious.
I have a very like calm, quiet energy. I mean, anytime I was younger and I'd go for a job, they'd be like, are you tired? And I'm like, no, I just like to sit and listen.
Did you fly to LA and LA to New York?
Straight from Auckland to New York.
Oh,
17
my.
Hours.
That didn't exist. That flight didn't exist.
2 years ago I came, September.
Yeah. So that didn't exist when I went there in 2016. And we spent, you know, Christmas in the north. And I made one clerical mistake on that flight because we flew to LA and then LA to, where did I fly into?
Auckland.
Yeah, to Auckland, I guess, right? And then we helicoptered it up the water. Mm-hmm. And then I did the bungee jump in the Nevis crevice.
Yes.
I still have that video. My legs locked up like jelly. And then I just fell over off that thing. It was nuts.
Did your wife do the bungee jump as well?
No. But she filmed me and she was like, you've never been whiter. Than when you are being pulled up the Nevis crevice thing. And then there's a sign. Have you ever been there?
No, I haven't.
See, because you live there.
Yeah.
So there's a sign as you're coming up. It's the bungee jump companies make so much money.
Yeah.
It's pure profit. All they do, they invest in things once and then they just throw people off this thing. And there's a sign that says, I can't remember exactly, but it's something along the lines of too scared your first time, go again for half off. And I think people are like, oh, okay, I was scared. But the second time, I'm going to do something cool in front of the camera. And I was just like, I remember that so clearly because I was like, what a genius marketing move. But anyway, the clerical error I made was I didn't used to fly as much back then.
Mm-hmm.
Like we had just gotten married. I wasn't like doing speeches all over the world the way I do now. So now I feel like I'm in an airplane way too much. Back then, like, I don't know, like twice a year I would do a big long flight.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I've slept and watched movies. And I never really moved. So I didn't get up and stand up and walk around. And so then I get to New Zealand and my legs start hurting. And I couldn't, it's like, you know, if you grab your foot and you try to, like your quad muscle mm-hmm. and try to stretch it, and you know, it burns.
Not really.
You know, like if you try to stretch your quad right now, it'll like, you know, yeah. like a stretch, you get that stretch feeling.
Yeah.
And if you really stretch it, you're like, ah, stretching it too much. Imagine that while you're laying down. And I couldn't sleep. I was like, something's going on with my legs. I was like, I kept moving.
It's like restless leg syndrome.
Yeah, it was like, but it was like a sick, it was a symptom of like deep vein thrombosis. So like, because I hadn't moved and I'd never been on a flight that long. And I didn't wear the special socks.
The socks, yeah.
Right? And all that stuff.
Rookie move.
Rookie, exactly. I'd never, yeah. So I had to go to the New Zealand hospital and they just pumped me full of drugs. And then they gave me a prescription to go to a pharmacy in New Zealand to get two very specific type of medication. And in New York, if I go and get medication, you know, you get like a 30-day supply. Anything else, they like, they'll take your kids from you.
Mm-hmm.
And I will never forget, they gave me like a paper bag full of pills.
3 months.
And I still have those pills because I didn't need them all. I still have them in my house to this day. I have moved with those New Zealand pills. I don't even know if they work anymore.
They're probably expired.
Yeah, probably.
When did you get married? How long ago was this?
We got married in 2016 in the summer.
They probably so then expired.
Yeah, probably. I probably shouldn't take them. But I keep them because they saved my life. Like,
wow.
I was on the floor of our first resort hotel. I was on the floor of the lobby, like tears in my eyes. I couldn't move my legs. It was the absolute worst. Anyway, I've recovered, everything's fine.
And you've started walking every time you go on planes now, up and down the aisles.
Yeah, I get the standing room seat. I just stand the whole time. I hold on to the back. You know, I'm the guy in the airplane who's like working out now. Like, no way will I let that altitude break my veins.
Your like carry-on bag is just gym gear now.
Yeah, I'm that guy who's like doing awkward lunges like down the aisle and people are trying to sleep.
That is so funny. One of the things that our community really wanted to know with what you've done and how much you've achieved is when it comes to personal branding, yes, we've got the idea and we want to do it, but they really struggle with discipline. And I think that's one thing, if I could say one thing your brand is really known for, it's doing the thing, saying you're going to do something and then actually getting it done. But discipline isn't coming from motivation. We obviously have all learned that over time. How do you stay disciplined when you just don't have it in you, or you have deep vein thrombosis? How do you go through it?
It's so hard. Discipline is the one thing I can't teach.
Okay.
I can help people find motivation, right? You can help someone find their why. And really oftentimes it's easier to help someone find their wall. Right. So, you know, I have this in my first book, I talk about like the four W's, and, you know, it's really being very clear as to what your win is, like what's your goal. You know, people have a vision board, they want to lose weight. So they print out a photo of like a supermodel, like that's what I want to be. And it's pretty easy to forget about that photo because then you're like, yeah, but cake is nice. It's much better to focus on your wall. Like, what's that thing that you're actually working towards? What are you trying to get away from? Were you a garbage man? Were you a substitute teacher? If this doesn't work, do you have to move home?
Mm.
Like, we had one of our course members was a homeless drug addict in Nashville, Tennessee. His wall is his mugshot, and he'll never go back there. Right? Like, I've got a couple walls. One wall is having my debit card declined at the grocery store in the summer of 2008 and having completely run out of money and not knowing what to do. And like, do I go home? Like, how do I? What do I do? Like that, I will never, that's a core memory for me. So I run as far away from being that poor as I possibly can. And then my other wall is in the future because I you know, use that face app to age yourself.
Oh,
have you
yes.
ever done that?
I've tried that. Don't do it. It's horrific.
Everyone should do it. And so to see what my face looks like when I'm like 80,
yeah,
that's also my wall because I want that guy's life to be so great that any sacrifice I'm willing to do today is absolutely worth it. You know, I look at life as like a mixture of like wins and then everything that it takes to get there. So kind of like water displacement. Like if we took a glass of water right now, right? And you filled it up halfway with water and then you filled it up with ice all the way to the top. Like that's your life, okay? And that's your life lived full.
Mm-hmm.
All the wins you're ever gonna achieve, they've all been planned out. Everything happens on purpose, okay? That's your life in full. With discipline, if you just want to focus on your wins, you got to take all the ice out. Mm-hmm. And now all that empty space is the sacrifice that you've had to give over time. And it's the life you're not living. You know, it's the loss due to a lack of discipline because you just focused on the wins. You took it out. And then there's the other people who just spend all their time being negative, focused on all the loss. So now you pour all the water out and now you just have a glass full of ice. It looks okay, but now you can't drink any of it, right? Now it's empty. And I'll never forget, and I think everyone just sort of has to find their own version of this story. Like, I grew up with a dad who got up every day at like 5 in the morning and was out the door to work by 5:50. And I remember that because it was just, it was so specific, like 5:50, but he knew that it was going to take him 35 minutes to get to work and he needed to get to work by 6:30. And so, I don't know, as a little kid, your parents do things. You're like, that's what my parents do. That's what life is. You never even think about it. And that's just what he did his whole life, and he retired and whatever. And so then I get into real estate, and you know, as an actor in New York City, there's no time. Right? I wasn't waking up at 5 in the morning. There's nothing to do, right? And so I could go to the gym at 9 a.m., 10 p.m., whatever I wanted to do. Then I get into real estate and I have a job and my time is controlled by clients and I have no time anymore. Mm. And so then I have to wake up at 7, then I have to wake up at 6. I was like, oh my God, the only time I can go to the gym, if that's what I want to do, is like 5 in the morning. I got to wake up at 4:30. That sucks.
I've become my father.
Right. So then I started waking up at 4:30, going to the gym. It's fine. I get tired later, but then I don't have time for friends, family. Like, I'm trying to balance time. And I remember my parents came to visit me and I was complaining. And I sat there and I complained about how early I had to wake up and this sucks. And I hate this job and real estate's stupid. And I wish I could do this. And just complaining like you do to your safe people, and your parents are like safe people. And my dad cut me off and he's like, wait. Do you think that I wanted to wake up at 5 in the morning every day when I was working? I was like, what do you mean? Of course you did. Like, well, that's what your job. That was your job. That's what you did. Yeah. And he's like, I would much rather want to sleep in, watch TV, go play golf, hang out with you. No, I did it because it was the job and it's what the job called for, mm-hmm. to help give you guys the life that I wanted to give you. And I don't know why, but that really messed with my head. Because it's like, are you telling me that discipline is a choice? I just thought that's what you like did. I just thought it's what you did. I just thought that's what you wanted to do. I just thought like you could have had any job. So you picked the one that made you wake up at 5 in the morning. Like, oh my God, I can't complain anymore. Like, this is a choice. If I want to lead a life that I want to lead, I do not get the right to complain when it's hard, because it's supposed to be hard. You know, there's lots of things that aren't that hard, but then there's different hard.
Mm. Sort of choose them, don't you?
100%. You know, and I think a key to figuring out how to have your discipline, because I think it's hard when you're really hungry. I think it's also hard when you're really overweight. I think it's hard when you're really, really poor. I think it's also hard when you have lots of money and you're completely alone and you have no trust of anyone and you work 7 days a week, 20 hours a day, and you have to pick your hard. So do you want to be the poor hard or do you want to be the rich hard? Mm. Do you want to be the hungry hard or do you want to be the fat hard? Pick one, or pick one in the middle.
Yeah.
Because in the middle, you have to make disciplinary choices for yourself all day, every day. And that is probably the hardest, because you have to think about it all the time. It's way easier to only do one of the extremes, right? It's much, much easier to, in the United States anyway, to be a hardcore left liberal, mm-hmm. or be a hardcore conservative, right, on the right. It is so much harder to think, to critically think, and to make your own decisions. It's so much harder to read. Reading is hard. It takes time. It's so much harder to listen and like understand what you think on your own versus just picking a direction and going with it. And so I think you have to choose your heart.
I think you have summed that up beautifully, and you really can't go around it any other way. For those that have listened in and thought, this is incredible, Sky knows what he's talking about. How do I follow along? How do I, you know, get into this personal branding idea and make it work for me? Where can we find you? Where are you at?
Well, my name is Ryan Serhant. I'm everywhere under Ryan Serhant. Go get my new book. It's the last one I'm ever going to write because it's so hard to do, called Brand It Like Serhant. It's really the branding blueprint for anybody that just wants to build a brand for yourself or for your product or for your business. And I think, I don't know when this is going to come out, but we just filmed our new show for Netflix because I left Millionaire Listing New York when I started this company because it didn't work. I wasn't a real estate agent anymore. So that didn't make sense. So that was a weird time in my life, but we just finished filming our new show and that got announced last week, I guess. And so now that will come out soon. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned. I was talking to one of your colleagues earlier and he was telling me about him. He like manages the sales team. And I was like, this sounds like this could be a show. And he was like, well, the thing is, it's going to be.
So complete insanity here. This whole building is just one big reality TV show. I'm sure that's why we are one.
I'm very excited to watch it. I've read the book. It's fantastic. Everyone should have a read or listen to the audiobook. And Ryan, thank you so much for your time. I know how busy you are.
Thanks for having me.
And as always, to finish off with the disclaimer, Girls That Invest does not provide personalized investing advice for your individual needs. We are not financial advisors. The advice from Girls That Invest exists for educational purposes only and should not be relied upon to make an investment or financial decision. Advice from Girls That Invest is general in nature and does not consider your individual circumstances. Always do your research and please do your due diligence.